Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to everyone. Welcome to this At Large Capacity Building Program 2015 webinar on the topic of security and stability. This is the seventh webinar in this program, held today on Wednesday, the 10th of June at 2100 UTC. We will not be doing a roll call for this webinar. However, we would like to remind everyone to please state your names when speaking, not only for transcript purposes, but also to allow our interpreters on the French and Spanish channel to identify you, and also if they could ask you to speak at a reasonable speed to allow for accurate interpretation. Thank you very much, and over to you, Alan.
Thank you very much, Gisela, for the record and interpretation. My name is not Tijani Benjamin. But I am replacing Tijani today, who couldn't be here. Tijani is the person who has organized these capacity building webinars, and for that I think we all owe him a debt of gratitude. And I have the easy job, after he's done all the hard work, of simply saying that this is one of the webinars that I would have attended even if I wasn't supposed to be attending them, because I think security and stability, obviously, of the DNS is obviously a critical issue, but it's also work done by some of the more interesting people that we meet on these kind of webinars, a personal statement. And I'd like to turn it over to Julie Hammer, who is the ALAC liaison to the Security and Stability Advisory Committee and our own star in this area. So, Julie, it's all yours.
Thank you, Alan. Little exaggeration, but I thank you very much. Next slide, please. What I would like to do in the seminar today is touch on some definitions, discuss ICANN's role, talk about why security and stability is important, and then cover the role of the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, the SAC. And then I'm going to be handing over to Dave Piscatello and Richard Lamb from ICANN staff, who will talk about some very interesting details of ICANN's capability building program, as well as, I'm sure, any other interesting aspects of security and stability. Next slide, please. Just to set the scene on what ICANN's mission is, it's to coordinate the allocation of the Internet's unique identifier systems, and importantly, its second listed technical mission is to preserve and enhance the stability, security and resiliency of these systems. And you can see another two roles there: to maintain and operate the LRoot main server instance as steward for the community, and to manage ICANN's own internal systems, and to provide a publicly accessible portal to disseminate and share information. So it's that second role, the security, stability and resiliency of the systems, that we're focusing on today. Next slide, please. And to try and define what we mean by that, I've extracted these definitions from the SSR framework, and I'll just quickly read them. Security is the capacity to protect and prevent misuse of the Internet unique identifiers. Stability is the capacity to ensure that the system operates as expected and that users of the unique identifiers have confidence that it will. Resiliency is the capacity of the unique identifier system to effectively withstand or tolerate or survive malicious attacks and other disruptive events without interrupting or ceasing service. Next slide, please. So in that context, it's important to understand what ICANN is not. and I've listed a number of things here. ICANN is not a law enforcement agency, a court of law, or a government agency, although law enforcement and government do participate as stakeholders in ICANN's processes and in policy development. ICANN is not responsible for policing the internet or operationally combating criminal behaviour. It is not responsible for determining what constitutes illicit conduct on the internet. It is not involved in use of the internet related to cyber espionage or cyber war. And it's not authorised to unilaterally suspend or terminate domain names, although it is able to enforce its contracts with third parties, including domain name registration providers. Next slide, please. So that's what ICANN is not, but what ICANN does do is play a role in supporting the work of law enforcement or government agencies in carrying out their legitimate actions, and that is done on request. It does participate in the operational security community in studying, analysing and identifying malicious use or abuse of the DNS. And it does play the same part as any interested stakeholder with regard to internet protocols, and more specifically in the evolution of internet protocols and related standards that are not under the purview of ICANN but are actually developed in the Internet Engineering Task Force, the IETF, and the Internet Architecture Board, the IAB. Next slide, please. So there are a number of ways in which we can consider security is viewed within ICANN. First of all, it's actually a core value for ICANN, and that is in accordance with the affirmation of commitment. It's one of the four focus areas of the ICANN strategic plan. It's an overall thematic area cutting right across the organisation. It's an issue that's of concern to every stakeholder group. Security is also a department within ICANN, the security team. Security is an essential element in all projects and activities that ICANN undertakes. And, of course, it is a key stakeholder group within ICANN, and that is the Security and Stability Advisory Committee. Next slide, please. So just to dwell briefly on why is security and stability important. Firstly, it contributes to the stability of the global economic environment. The internet is fundamental to economic well-being in every country today, and the stability of the DNS system contributes to that. It assists the prosperity of developing and developed nations. It supports national security, emergency response, and the preservation of law and order. It facilitates the correct functioning of critical infrastructure, and that role is growing, in my view, the degree to which critical infrastructure relies on the DNS for its correct functioning. It enhances opportunities for business and commerce. It enables the free flow of information, and it protects the interests of individual users of the internet. Next slide, please. So to just share a little information on the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, the ESAC. The ESAC's charter is to advise the ICANN community and the ICANN board on matters relating to the security and stability of the Internet naming and address allocation system. ESAC was initiated in 2001 and began operation in 2002, and it provides guidance to the board, to supporting organisations and advisory committees, to ICANN staff and to the general community. And as of today, there are 34 members of the ESAC, all of whom are appointed by the ICANN board for three-year terms. Next slide, please. So the ESAC activities are focused in a number of different groups. The membership committee is one of the permanent committees of the ESAC, and it reviews how each ESAC member contributes to the group. There is quite a newly instituted permanent work party that actually tracks the advice that ESAC has provided to the board and what the outcomes of that advice are. There are work parties that plan the activities for ICANN meetings, both the ESAC private meetings, but also the DNSSEC workshops that are open to everybody, and ESAC outreach to law enforcement. The ESAC has an annual workshop for 2 to 3 days that happens usually in September of each year, where it retreats and considers its work program and reviews and updates it. And then there are specific ESAC work parties that normally conclude in the production of an ESAC report. And one that is just concluded within the last week or so is the public suffix list, and that report has just been posted on the ESAC reports webpage. There is an ESAC party looking at how credentials are managed and looking at producing best practices for the protection of registrants in the credential management lifecycle. There is a work party looking at where we're at with new GTLDs and what might need to be undertaken before the next round of new GTLDs. And there is a work party looking at producing a report from the 2014 Internet Governance Forum. Next. So the next three slides, which I will just ask Gisela to scroll through slowly, is just listing the number of reports that the ESAC has produced in the last 3 years. And as you can see, they fall into a number of categories. The first category is DNS security in general, and there were quite a few reports, about 7 reports produced in that category. 1 report on DNS abuse, 1 on internationalized domain names, 2 on who is data, and then finally, the ESAC produced 3 reports to assist the community to focus on relevant aspects of the IONA stewardship transition, primarily, if you like, as supporting, not to express a view, but to support the rest of the community in understanding what the IONA functions were about, what the contract covered, and the sorts of things that ought to be considered in a transition proposal. And finally, again, very recently, the ESAC has provided a short comment on the proposal of the cross-community working group on ICANN accountability enhancements. So it has been for a small group of between 30 and 40 people, it has been quite active within the last few years considering the number of reports raised. I would now like to hand over to Dave Piscatello and Richard Lamb to expand a little bit more on ICANN staff's role and activities. Thanks, Dave.
Dave? You want me to go?
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm here. Thank you very much for inviting Rick and me to speak with you today. I'd like to limit the amount of formal talk that Rick and I give and give you all opportunities to ask some questions about what our day job looks like, because it's probably very different from most of the ICANN staff. We have some very different interests. And what I'd like to do before I use my slides is talk a little bit about one of the points that Julie raised, which was the definition of security, stability, and resiliency. And in particular, I think the part of the FSR that gives us a little bit of room to navigate in the very tricky space of trying to deal with abuse in particular is, Julie explained that stability has to do with the system operating as expected. For the most part, I think that the ICANN community tends to think of that in terms of letter versus spirit, and I tend to be a little bit more spirited. As many of you know, one of the things that I always argue with people who say, well, this is not in your remit and that is not in your remit, is the system is expected to not return misleading or harmful answers. It's not expected to abet criminal activity and terrorism and bullying and all the trials and trepidations that internet users face. And so, in my mind, and this is very loosely interpretive, the system's not stable if it's not giving honest answers. It's not stable if it's creating opportunities for abuse, or it's creating the potential for actual or financial harm. And this is going to become even more pressing as we evolve to an Internet of Things than it is today. So, while our team doesn't judge content and we don't take direct actions on the suspension of domain names, or we don't take direct actions involving our contractual agreements with our with ICANN's contractual partners, we do collaborate with them. We collaborate with law enforcement, we collaborate with other security researchers in academia. We facilitate conversations to try to bring communities together so that legitimate court instruments can be executed in a timely fashion and actions can be taken to dismantle global botnets that are creating chaos in the Internet.
Dave?
Yes?
Dave?
Yeah?
I'm terribly sorry, Gisela, and I'm terribly sorry to interrupt you, but the interpreters are struggling to hear you. I'm not sure if you're on a headset or a landline or a cell phone.
I'm on a mobile phone, but that's really the constraint of where I'm calling in from.
If you could maybe speak closer to the phone, both French and Spanish interpreters are struggling to understand.
Okay, is this better?
I'm just getting confirmation from the interpreters. I do apologize for the inconvenience.
Well, let me continue, and if it's not working, let's just try to, I'll try to go off speakerphone and see if holding the handset works.
Please, thank you.
Okay, so having created a little bit of a context for some of the activities that we engage in, I'm trying to find the slides here. I got to go one more, and maybe one more, and maybe one more. Is there another slide deck? I'm only seeing the slides from Julie here.
I hear you, Dave.
Oh, we're just switching decks here. Oh, thank you so much. Okay, so one of the things that our team does that is a little bit of a departure from the way that the rest of the world views SSR is that we have to consider not only domain names, but all the identifier systems that ICANN is responsible for overseeing. So that includes, cooperation with the regional internet registries on internet address allocation abuse, autonomous system number abuse. It includes just consideration of any of the registries that ICANN either manages directly or provides some oversight for. I am seeing, by advancing a slide, I'm seeing a slide that says functional areas and nothing else. So I'm going to see if I can at least get to my slide so that we can proceed. Okay, so we look at our roles as defined four functional areas. Perhaps the one that people are least familiar with, but one that is almost a 24/7 activity for many of us in the SSR team, is what we call threat awareness and preparedness. It's closely associated with what we call trust-based collaboration because one of the things that that our team does is spend most of our time in an external-facing capacity. We are very often the only recognized bridge between contract parties like registrars and registries and law enforcement and the security community. In situations where there's a threat to the identifier system, John Crane in particular is literally the SSR Rolodex. He has the ability to reach out to nearly every CCPLD, as I believe Rick probably does, find someone there who is technically competent to help address an issue or to help help mitigate threats. The kinds of activities that we often get called in to assist with are liaising between ICANN's registry or registrar liaison, between the registry and registrars proper, and legal counsel in situations where law enforcement in a multi-jurisdictional capacity will seek a court order to dismantle a botnet. So I think some of you may be familiar with ransomware, and ransomware is a kind of infection on your computer. And what the ransomware authors have done is created a fairly malicious package that will encrypt all the data on your computer and then hold you ransom if you don't pay a fine or a fee. Within 24 hours, they will throw away the key, and you will lose your data forever. So this is a particularly nasty nasty scam. And for a number of months, law enforcement were chasing a ransomware criminal conspiracy that was known as Game Over Zeus and CryptoLocker. In the Game Over Zeus and CryptoLocker activity, John and I were asked to assist in arranging correspondence and communication between the registries where the domains were being registered in order to sustain or maintain the botnet. We helped with the technical details that would eventually make their way into a court order that explained what the law enforcement agents would want to see executed once the court orders were issued. And so over the course of many, many months, we were party to trying to make certain that on a given day, at a given time, in multiple jurisdictions, the court orders would be executed, the registries would do what they needed, law enforcement would seize equipment and would apprehend conspirators, and it was a very successful sexual undertaking. But it was a very interesting process for us. It was also, I think, very beneficial to the community. It restored, in my mind, stability to the Internet. We didn't have to worry about getting online and being held for ransom. Part of the reason that works is because John and I and Rick and Carlos and Steve are all known in security communities. Many of us work very closely in either mailing lists or other collaborative environments and share information about investigations. These are not always criminal investigations. Sometimes they're spam. Sometimes they're trying to identify people who are running illegal pharmaceutical affiliate programs or who are running counterfeit goods scams. Even the 419 or Nigerian scams, things like Stranded Traveler and others, are the kinds of activities that we monitor. And having been in security for 25 years, these are things I did before I came to ICANN, and things that John did when he was at Center. So we were involved, we're trusted, and we are able to bring people together to try and help come up with ways to solve problems, ways to mitigate threats. One of the things that we're now trying to do is falls under this title, Identify SSR Analytics, and this is where one of Rick's talents, he's an excellent programmer, is coming to the fore. We're trying to look at the new TLD programs, and I think the first time in ICANN's history, gather our own information and look at and understand from our own research and our own analysis of all the data that ICANN can collect from, for example, the LRoot system, or from our partners who provide phishing feeds like the APWG, the Anti-Phishing Working Group. So Rick is actually working on a program right now that's going to help us track phishing in the new TLD program. Is it more than the legacy TLDs? Is it less? If so, more or less, why? So we're going to start asking questions like that. Within that analytics project, we were also doing things like investigating the characteristics of of verticals in the community, financials or others, and trying to understand how do they use Whois? Are they leaving themselves exposed to some sort of a criminal attack because they are not providing adequate measures to make certain that their domains are not hijacked. So those are all things that that we do that I think most people aren't that familiar with. The last, I think, is one that a lot of people are familiar with because we touch so many countries, and this is, again, one of the places where Rick Rick excels and spends a lot of time, and I'll let him talk more about it. We spend an awful lot of time and do an awful lot of travel delivering training, and so our capability building programs allow us to to go to countries where they do not have access to to subject matter experts like Rick or like some of the people that we contract through the NSRC, we are able to go to countries and explain how to perform or to build networks, to build secure networks, to create secure registry operations. About 3 years ago, almost four now, Bobby Flame, who was a supervisory special agent with the FBI, came to me and said at an ICANN meeting, could you sort of explain to us how the DNS works and how are people actually doing some of these investigations? From a 30-minute conversation at one ICANN meeting, I was asked next time to do an hour, then two, then four, and at this point, we've grown that program of providing law enforcement with knowledge so that they can conduct investigations into DNS abuse and misuse to something that can easily run a day and a half, perhaps 2 days. We're now doing that in all five regions. Carlos Alvarez is delivering it in Spanish in Latin America. John and I and Steve Conti are doing it in Europe and the Middle East. I've been doing a lot of it in North America. And Champika Wajimatanga, who is a part-time global stakeholder engagement staff and part-time security staff, spends, I think, almost all his life on planes or doing training. At least that's what it looks like, on the basis of the number of times he's delivering this kind of training. It's been very, very well received. We actually received a nomination for a World Summit on Information Security, our Information Society Project Prize. We didn't win, but just being nominated was quite exciting. So we have a lot of different activities, and I think I'm going to stop there and let Rick talk about some of the things that he's been doing so that we have maybe another 20 or 30 minutes at the end of the time for you guys to ask questions to us about some of the other things that you might be curious. Thank you.
Well, I'll pause for a minute to see if there are any questions before I start. Hearing none, that capability building aspect that Dave brought up, I wanted to make clear. First of all, thank you for entertaining and listening to us speak. I know it's sometimes we get too excited and we move a bit quick for the interpreters, so I'll try not to do that. But that capability aspect, I think, if Dave didn't emphasize it enough, is the trust that we build in those exercises, whether it's law enforcement or DNS or building a secure network. I always look at that as being, it's not the textbook knowledge. It's not even the hands-on knowledge that we give them. All of this is very valuable, but what's most important is the week or the few days that we spend immersed with this, with each region and the people in that region that are interested in a topic, and the networks that are then created between those people. The human trust networks, as I always look at it, are more important than the computer networks, because if something does go wrong and there is some sort of a threat, it's that human network you're going to have to engage. So it's not like we're going around just providing information one way and giving, say, law enforcement some sort of, you know, help in finding things. It's also, it's more of a two-way street so that the communication links happen. So now I'm going to back up for a second. One of the nice, interesting things about our SSR team is we are very different people. Dave and I fight all the time. We have very different views, which is a good thing. So I wake up every morning actually doing a sanity check. Why am I still here at ICANN? and what am I doing? You know, we're all in this business and on this call probably because some part of us cares about what the final result is. So, you know, one of the questions I like to ask while I'm doing that sanity check is, what if we weren't here? Okay, what if ICANN was not here? And what if the security, stability, and resiliency team was not here? I mean, you know, there are aspects of that that have confused me for a bit. I used to work in the U.S. State Department and was involved in the turning the WSIS into the IGF and adding one of those S's in the SSR. You know, I sometimes wonder what good does this all do and what would happen if we weren't here? And the natural answers I come up with that as well. Of course, if there's no one coordinating, you know, the root zone or the IP addresses or the protocol numbers, there'd be duplicates. Things would not work. Julie said earlier, very, very, very eloquently, there's a certain stability for businesses that we provide, and businesses hate instability. So the stability is critical to innovation, to you know, the economic well-being of many, many efforts. You know, you often hear about alternate routes, and you know, every time you say that, there's always a part of the room that gets all scared and jumpy and stuff like this because this is the worst thing in the world. It's not so bad in and of itself, other than you know it sometimes distracts people from what's important. As I'm doing the sanity check, I say, well, you know, what controls do we have? Again, I have to hand it to Julie for being so clear in describing some of this stuff. We have no statutory authority on the root. It's just a file. Anybody can go to anybody. The only reason they use our root zone file is because we're good at making people like us. And that's something that I think is often lost. We have no power, which is interesting. So I continue to ask the question, why am I here? This sounds like a precarious kind of you know, organization. But there are a few things we can do. Not only some of the training stuff, which I'll get into in a minute, but we do have these agreements between the various registrars. For example, I'm just going to pick one. Allow them to sell, and I'm sorry, I'm going to be very direct here, because this is how I justify it to myself. Those agreements allow some registers to sell .com domains. That's a moneymaker. Okay, so just follow the money. that's a lever that we therefore then have over, let's say, registrars, for one example. The compliance team deals with that. And then the question comes to my mind, are we policemen or are we partners? Well, again, as Dave pointed out, as well as Julie pointed out, we're partners. We're partners with the community. And I think this is where our largest contribution is. Not only the training, but acting as a coordination point for some of this threat awareness and preparedness are key functions that the SSR team provides. I mean, it's you know, a lot of it goes unnoticed because a lot of times these things happen quietly, as they should. I think that's something that's hard to point out. There's very little, if any, other coordination points like ICANN. And then the training that we do is, again, something that does build this fundamental trust between people so that, and I love quoting this guy from Department of Justice in the U.S. He says, you know, at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night, if I get a phone call from something related to my work to take down some website or something like that. If it is through some hierarchy, through his company, through the different channels of command, he's on his time off. He's not going to answer the phone. However, if he spent time with his counterpart, say in Estonia, having beers, relaxing with them in a law enforcement training class held by Dave and John, he will most likely pick up that phone and deal with the problem, solve it, and it'll be done with right away. His point was specifically against ITU efforts like impact versus bottom-up efforts like what we do. So a lot of the training thing does solve the problem in a much more effective way. Let's see. So we've done an awful lot of things here as far as coordination. Of course, we don't just limit our work to the DNS as maybe we should, but oftentimes we are called upon to be experts in other areas. For example, the OAS has called us a few times on creating national cyber frameworks for various countries. And very impressive work by our friend Balisario from OAS. But we get called in because of our experience in the multi-stakeholder model and because of our ability to encourage a light regulatory approach but yet still encourage a rule of law. And, of course, our relationship with the CCTLDs, these are key. So that's what I do every day to convince myself that, yes, we are still doing something very useful. And, of course, there is I hesitate to bring up DNSSEC because that is something that's near and dear to my heart, and it's something that I was key in making happen as far as getting the route signed. That's a different aspect of what we do at in the SSR team, and is critical in many ways, not just to secure the DNS, which is how it's often simply portrayed, but the real reason all us geeks, get up every morning and care about this thing is DNSSEC deployed to a certain level ends up creating this global secure database. And nothing like that exists. And if we could get enough people to deploy this, a certain critical mass, then all of a sudden, Internet of Things, the smallest item at the edges of the Internet, every single device will have at least something that they can hang their hat on for security, something to get a secure delivery of either key material, not just a domain name or an IP address, but something else. And that is an entrepreneur's dream. This is an opportunity for everything. And I, admittedly, often end my talks or trainings with a spiel on how to apply for patents and start a business. Because this is something I've done in the past many, many times. And every time I see... I'm sorry, I get kind of excited here. Every time I see a classroom full of people, younger people particularly, that seem to be afraid to take a chance, I just lay right into them. and we have long talks about things. A lot of times it's nothing they can do, rule of law in their country, et cetera, instability within their current government, et cetera. But I try to show them that there's a lot more that can be done here, and that the DNS and ICANN in particular, with its very generous and broad programs to try to help society, is not just about DNS and IP addresses and so forth. And with that, I've been here for over 7 years, so I guess the sanity check keeps working. I don't know. That's it for my end. I don't know, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to spend some time just answering questions about whatever SSR issues you'd like to learn about. If you want to know some of the inner machinations of any of the functional areas that we talked about, I'm happy to give some more examples.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions?
We have well over a half an hour. Holly.
First a comment and then a question. One of the things I do is teach communication law, and for the lawyers in the room, you would know that jurisdiction is an issue, and jurisdictions kind of end at borders, and in Australia's case, end at the ocean, or lots of oceans. Increasingly, I use the ICANN diagram to say, now that we, in fact, in a global communications world, that the problems are offshore, what do you do about the problems offshore? And so I've found this really interesting because it's the missing piece that says when things go wrong, this is where you go and this is where your law enforcement agencies and your security people and so forth go, even though it's not, if you will, it doesn't solve the jurisdictional problem, it solves the actual practical problem. So thank you for that, because maybe I can just say, keep getting up, Rick, because you're needed in the whole scheme of things and in what I teach. I think my question was, as maybe Dave knows, I've read a lot of all the SSAC documents. What I know, they're all only voluntary, but how useful do you find them, and how useful is it to say, well, what do you do to make sure that people listen and read them and then take notice of them? Thanks.
So I think you're asking how useful are FX documents. Is that correct?
Very. Yep, very.
So I have a couple of different answers, because I spend so much more time outside the ICANN community than inside the ICANN community that one of the things I'm always startled by when I come back to the ICANN community is how tiny and incestuous and the community is, and I don't mean that in a malicious way. I just mean that the ICANN community tends to believe that it's like the biggest thing in the whole world, and that the world revolves around the DNS, and if the DNS went away, or ICANN went away, the DNS would stop. And I have to laugh, because we're a tiny fraction of what goes on. As Rick said, ultimately, with respect to the operational parts of the DNS, we generate a text file. So I know it sounds it over trivializes it, but it also puts it into context. The operational surface that ICANN actually influences is microscopic by comparison to the number of end systems and the number of systems that resolve domain names to Internet addresses all over the world, and the different organizations that don't have contracts with ICANN that do this. And that's where I spend most of my 22 waking hours sometimes. So one thing that I would say is that FSOC documents have had a very, very good impact inside the ICANN community. Having said that, it's like saying that a tax report has had good impacts on the 1% in the U.S. U.S. economic structure. I would love to be able to figure out ways, and I'd be happy to sit down with Julie and others in ISAC to say, how do we actually amplify this signal and get other people to understand some of the things that ISAC has said? I think especially some of the more recent recent reports that ISAC put together on search lists and on credential management they're great, but they're not going to reach a lot of the people that actually need them. I find, frankly, that I reach more people summarizing an FSAC document on a blog post than all the hits on some of the documents that we've published over 5 years. So that's probably not a good indicator. So one of the things I would like to be able to do is figure out how do we actually get this message to other people? Because we do only reach a small fraction of the people who actually need to hear these messages.
Dave, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. One of the things I'm sure you've heard, too, is, and I've heard a lot from non-community members, people from outside the ICANN community, is that we do not include enough of the operators and the people who actually have to deal with these things on a day-to-day basis. And I'm not really sure how to bring them in. Most of them are, when they see the word policy, they tend to, you know, run the other way. But there is definitely kind of a missing element to the operator community who would feel the pain. I guess I'm just going to get down to basic stuff here. They need to feel the pain to want to read the SAC documents.
Yeah.
You know, Rick, you touch on a – I don't want to make this a conversation between you and me, but you know, you touch
as
on
it
a,
always is.
On a point that is really, really has always confused me about the organization called the Generic Name Supporting Organization. One of the constituencies that to me is remarkably absent are people who run large enterprise networks or large ISPs. We have constituencies, but when I go and I see who participates, I don't see an Akamai. Akamai delivers more content than anyone. I don't see PayPal. I see PayPal in the policy part, but I don't see them talking about explain or asking. This is something we need to pay attention to. Some of the ways that our contracts with registrars or our contracts with registries are written, clearly don't. They're multi-stakeholder, but not all the stakeholders. And so I'd love to be able to figure out. Maybe crossing the beams here. But I'd love to be able to figure out how you actually get some of the stakeholders that have a stake but aren't present, in policy making.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't know what's happening with Adobe Connect. Mine disappeared. It came back. And I now see a message in the chat area attributed to me that I didn't type in. So I don't know if Adobe Connect is working or not. If anyone wants to speak and I don't see a hand, just yell, please. Somebody.
So my man in the middle attack is working.
Now's not a good time to confess to that. Come on.
So someone typed in, look at how fast people are dropping off, and it has my name on it, and I didn't type that. As a matter of fact, I wasn't connected to Adobe Connect when it was typed.
That's all right. Oh, now that's worth bringing up with someone in security.
Oh, we don't have any critics at ICANN, do we?
Well, they could be involved.
This is quite fascinating. In any case, we have a smiley face but no hands. So the smiley faces are working. There are no microphones, so no one is any longer connected via Adobe Connect and speaking on it. Oh, now all the microphones just came back.
I just hope staff has control of that, don't they?
I don't know.
We men in the middle could be. All I've got on the screen is questions.
Yeah, that's all there is.
Good. I blame you.
Anybody want to say anything? I'm going to type a message. I'm going to type a message and see whose name comes up.
I've got multiple attendees typing.
All right.
You still work? Who is this?
All right. Other than fascination with Adobe Connect, are there any other questions for our guests? Olivier, to the rescue.
Thanks very much, Alan. It's Olivier Cavarno speaking. I have a question with regards to DNSSEC. Following up on a discussion I had last week at one of these conferences, and someone came to me and said, well, this whole thing of DNSSEC is a bit of a problem as far as security is concerned, because when you are going to have a signed domain, the whole structure of signed domains from the point of your domain all the way up to your provider and the top-level domain, etc., all of that needs to be signed. And if there is a somewhere along the way some kind of a problem, then your domain is not as secure as it should be when DNSSEC is used. I was a little confused on that, and I wonder whether someone can reassure me of this, what appears to be some kind of a weakness in the use of DNSSEC.
I can probably even guess who that person is. It shows you how small this community is. first of all, I mean, he is not wrong, okay? I mean, DNSSEC requires that requires that the root and the ccTLD be secure. So that's two steps along the chain. And then including yourself, you know, if you're Google, you have to trust yourself. So if you assume that the root and Google are fine, then it's the ccTLD that you need to be concerned about. So he is correct, but I would argue that you are still net positive because you have now some sort of mechanism to check the validity of the response that you're getting from the DNS. Now, even if that relies on, you know, these three other parties, the root, the TLD, and yourself, that's still better than where you were before. Oftentimes, just to cut to the chase, oftentimes I am asked, okay, so who should I register my name under? Again, putting my business guy's hat on, well, who's got the deepest pockets to sue? So then I say, well, just register with .com, our dear friends at VeriSign. You know, I hate to say that, but you know what? You know, they are a large organization who has, by judging their press release and stuff, has tied their wagon to DNSSEC. So, you know, I think this guy's the short answer is he's right, but you're still ahead of the game because now you have a response that has been cryptographically verified, and instead of anywhere along the line someone being able to lie to you, for example, your connection between you and the ISP, that wire, you know, either going across the telephone poles or the, you know, coax or whatever, fiber if you're lucky, can be intercepted, modified, and changed. With DNS, you know, could change a response to the DNS question you posed. With DNSSEC, well, you're limited really only to the one intermediate stop. So I think, you know, this is one of those, there are two different groups of people out there, the certificate authorities out there who sell you the digital certificates to secure websites, see DNSSEC as competition, and they have regularly been throwing, you know, throwing up excuses and sand into the gears to not deploy it. But that's his excuse is a lame one. There are much better ones out there, such as, you know, Akamai not supporting parts of DNSSEC. But other than that, I don't know. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Okay.
I do have a follow-up that's also
sure.
DNSSEC related.
There's no one else in line, so go ahead.
Okay, thanks very much, Alan. So my other question is also relating to DNSSEC, and that's with regards to the recent political developments in Washington, D.C., with questions around encryption, around encryption keys, and you know, in some European countries, there are also some questions regarding the use of encryption and encryption keys and strong encryption, whether those keys should be given to the law enforcement agencies, whether there should be whether they should be allowed to have strong encryption keys.
Wow.
And so the question then is, how does that affect, how does this affect the viability of DNSSEC worldwide?
Wow. That's a really good question, and I'm sure Dave is going to jump into that as well. you know, certainly we don't control politics. I mean, as far as the root's concerned, I can speak authoritatively. I'm the guy who designed most of that, and I even wrote the software. I know where the hardware comes from. Sure, it comes from a town outside of London, so, you know, GCHQ and NSA, well, you know, you know, whatever that arrangement is. But as far as any we've never had any sort of suggestions, visits, or anything from anyone in the U.S. government, any government, as far as wanting access to this thing. In fact, just to be safe, I even contacted some of my old pals in NSA and before this thing happened and said, well, look, you know, it would really be awful in the 11th hour you came up and annoyed us. You're not gonna, are you? And anyway, they said, absolutely not. You guys are doing great. This is fine. Take that for what it's worth. Maybe that's good. Maybe that's bad. Anyway, my point is it's I have no control over the higher level politics, but we've, you know, at our level, we've been very transparent about it, and I'm proud of that because we do have these 21 people from around the world, and we're about to select new ones that actually hold bits and pieces of credentials that are needed for us to even access that piece of hardware. So even, I mean, you couldn't even get at the hardware without an international, you know, cadre of people to do this. And that was all my intention, to make it so that even if you didn't trust ICANN, you trust these people. So I don't know. I mean, Dave, I the political side of this, it's very hard for me to say anything to, because I just don't know. I certainly hope it doesn't go the way that the some of the bills are headed in Washington.
So it's not just Washington. I mean, if you looked at, you know, what some of the comments and statements that have come out of the United Kingdom and some of the proposals, you know, worldwide about, you know, about encryption right now, just, you know, I don't think ever in the history of mankind have so few people been so massively uninformed, and in a position to create such, you know, irreparable harm as the people who are trying to promote, you know, agenda where, you know, we create backdoors of encryption, or we prohibit encryption, or we prohibit the export of what's called intrusion software. I don't know if any of you have followed this Wassenaar Act. But it's just absolutely comical if it weren't so scary. I spend a lot of time with people, you know, on mailing lists who are much, much more well-versed in, you know, in cryptanalysis and cryptography than I am, and they are just, you know, they're mortified.
Hey.
Yes.
Dave, sorry to interrupt. There's no interpretation currently. We can't hear you.
I have it about as close to me as possible, so I'm not certain what we can do at this point. It might also be that I talk too fast when I get passionate. I think that especially because, you know, there are so many. You know, civil society implications about what's going on, you know, with encryption, that there's probably a very meaningful role for ALAC to, you know, to look at, you know, at what is being suggested in many of these bits of legislation, and the real threats and the real insanity of it all. As I mentioned earlier today, I was talking with members of the anti-phishing working group, and we were discussing legislation. And there is a bill under proposal that would prohibit the export without license of what is categorized or classified as intrusion software. If you actually go and look at the definition of intrusion software, I would argue that it is anything that you would legitimately use to test networks to see if they're secure. And in fact, you could probably claim that the little bit of software that's in every laptop and mobile device that resolves domain names could be considered intrusion software. And where I think most people who are not familiar with cryptography and internet working and security are going off the rails is that they seem to confuse what a piece of technology does with the intent to use that technology, and they think that those two things are tightly connected. And the problem is that that almost all the tools that a kernel uses are tools that we originally used for networking diagnostics, and they've been taken to the next level or they've been modified. But the kernels have to use exactly the same protocols and exactly the same domain name system as we do. And they have to use the same cryptographic mechanisms, if they're going to be able to to use commercial off-the-shelf software or open source. And so prohibiting people from doing the real practical day activities, the things that make the internet meaningful and enriching and commercially useful, can't be really separated from the things that that are exploited to abet criminal conspirators or terrorists or state actors who are intent on on exfiltrating information. So I find it really really unnerving, and I think that a lot of people who are in the ICANN community and at large could lend their competency to this argument and say, no, you're actually going to create serious problems. You're going to inhibit the ability for people to express themselves freely, to engage in lawful, rightful activities. And so I'd love to see more activity from your advisory committee on that.
Thank you very much. There was a question in the chat about, is there anything people in at large in the communities around the world can do to increase the implementation rate of DNSSEC? Any thoughts?
Wonderful question. I appreciate that. I think it's simply raising awareness that it provides security, specifically having websites signed or the domain names that websites used to have DNSSEC deployed on them, I think is critical at this point. These can be used as the motivations could be that it's a differentiator that allows you to provide something that says this is slightly more secure. Right now, we are at 80%, over 80% of the TLDs are signed. Most anyone could probably deploy DNSSEC. The resolvers, the side that validates this thing that the ISPs have, that's about 25% at this point and growing. So that's amazing how quickly that's growing. So the only piece of the puzzle that we're missing is the website gets signed. And that's, that should not be a hard thing, but we do need people to first know what it is. And if they need training, certainly ask. We offer free training, hands-on training, and start a dialogue through you guys or someone else just to find out what the barriers are. The current barriers I have found with, say, the Fortune 500 companies or the top, online properties through Alexa 500, I think it's a list, is that they sit behind something called content distribution networks. So they sit behind these massive systems that share the load for websites so that they can respond quickly. These systems break DNSSEC, and specifically they break Akamai's content distribution network. So it literally does come down to a very small set of people that are making this difficult. But the way ALAC could help is if you encourage the customer to ask for it, Akamai will roll. We'll take care of it. So Cloudflare, I think, is an organization that's competing with Akamai, although much smaller than Akamai. They're going to deploy DNSSEC across their platform, just have it free, just built in to their platform, I think, in a month or two. So that'll be another motivation for Akamai to catch up. But thank you for the question. That's very helpful.
Thank you very much. I would have thought that if a few of Akamai's largest customers say we demand it, it would happen. So it really comes down to those customers who are critical large users of Akamai to actually care enough about it.
Yeah, I guess that's not enough.
I don't think we have any influence over them.
No, we don't, and many of them have asked. U.S. government has, the military has asked, and they have not provided a reasonable way to support it. So, because it fundamentally changes their design.
Understood.
Yeah.
Any other questions? We still have another 15 minutes if anyone wants to do it, or we can give people back 15 minutes of their lives.
I'm not sure I can afford that much spare time. It's not like I'm leaving my country tomorrow or anything.
Try sleeping, Cheryl. Some of us use that to occupy a bit of time.
Can I just say, like sex, that is way overrated. And yes, I know that is going to be translated and transcribed. You feel free to quote me.
I won't ask you to go into details then.
Well, not on this call, Alan.
Olivier, is that a new hand or is that an old one?
That's a new hand, Alan.
Then I guess you have the floor.
Thanks very much, Olivier Capablon speaking. And I have another question with regards to DNSSEC. And this is to do with the cost of rollout of DNSSEC in, as you will know, a significant number of our at-large structures are based in countries which are developing economies. And I just wondered whether there was any additional infrastructure and likely high costs for rolling out DNSSEC in those countries, when you compare it, of course, with having a DNS that is unsigned.
Well, yes, there is additional work. And if I'm understanding the question right, there's additional work and most of the time, the problem in some of the developing kind of organizations or countries and the organizations in some of those developing countries is not intelligence staff. They have plenty of intelligence. Well, they have intelligence staff that are very, very capable. I can attest to that because many of them have been in my class and I've just been blown away. But they don't have enough. So typically, it's one person maybe having to deal with all of IT, and the last thing he needs or wants, and I would even recommend against, is to deploy DNSSEC in some sort of a haphazard fashion. So in that respect, yes, it's additional cost, and it might be prohibitive. The flip side of that is organizations like Cloudflare and others are starting to offer as part of their hosting service, and I know many of the websites from various parts of the world are, for better or for worse, hosted in Miami or somewhere in the U.S. So if you go to a hosting service that will take care of all this for you, then the cost is the same as it would be someone here that would be taking the same route. And I think in the long run, that's the direction this stuff will take. Talking to the large companies, most of them, unless the web is their only business, outsource the hosting of their website and often even the management of their website. So the focus should not necessarily be on the problem is not necessarily that the company itself, but it's the people offering the hosting service. Of course, if you get the end users to ask for it, then they'll maybe find a hosting service that offers this. So I wouldn't say specifically cost is a problem. It's usually, well, resources, cost, maybe the same thing. But it's not enough personnel. And at the CCTLD level, for example, that is often the case. You have very sharp individuals that are at some of these places, but there's only one of them. So that puts a burden on it. And I've changed my tune lately. Maybe, you know, my boss will try to fire me for this. But if they're not ready, don't deploy it, because I'd rather see someone deploy DNSSEC, a good installation of DNSSEC that'll work, than just tossing something together quickly and then having it fail later and give the naysayers like those which you've spoken to fodder.
Thank you very much.
Alan?
Yes, who's that?
This is Dave.
Go ahead.
There's a question in the chat that was directed to me about taking the DNS abuse crusade to all continents, including Africa and the Middle East. And I'm sorry, I can't pronounce the name, Makim Nwaki. Is that right?
Go ahead. Anyway.
Yeah. So he was asking, where are we gone so far? I just returned from Cairo, where I did a training, and I've done a training in Lebanon, and we'll be returning there. I know we do quite a bit of CCTLD training in Africa, and Rick probably can list some of the places where he's been. Often what we do is try to run some of our training in conjunction with with regional AFRINIC or Africa CERT organizations. So the other question that was asked is, how do we actually arrange engagements? The engagements normally come to us either through requests directly to our staff or through requests that are submitted to global stakeholder engagements. There's no real formal path. We don't have a sign-up sheet, so to speak. And that's partly because we don't have the staff capacity yet to deliver this as much as we would ideally have. And part of that is a chicken and egg. We're so busy trying to deliver the training that we haven't been able to actually put together the kinds of material that would allow us to effectively train trainers. We're trying very hard to correct that, but in the meantime, it's very hard to say no. And so we're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. And 2 years ago, I was the only one who was delivering this. Now everyone is delivering it, but Rick, and Rick is learning it. So one of our problems is that it's a very unique course, and it requires a fair amount of hands-on and involvement in actual investigations to deliver effectively. So it's going to be a slow path to actually be able to put together trainer programs and something formal enough where we can ask in the same way that people ask today for the CCTLD focused training.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? I saw Alberto's hand up a while ago, but it's now gone down, so I'm not sure if the question was answered anyway. Anyone else with any questions? We have a few more minutes left.
Alberto Soto, if I may take the floor.
Yes, please go ahead.
This is my question. Technically, DNSSEC is deployed or rolled over in several systems. Is that correct? Because you mentioned that maybe a provider is rolling over DNSSEC, then the cost is not going to be the same as that of another provider. So on what systems is DNSSEC implemented or rolled over? And is it similar to other security systems already in place? Thank you.
So DNSSEC is, it's really who, not what, that it's rolled, that it's been rolled out on. There are very few right now hosting providers that provide DNSSEC support. GoDaddy does, Cloudflare does, and there's a whole bunch of them in Northern Europe, I know, that also provide this. But we're talking about a less than a percent of the hosting providers right now support DNSSEC. That's the problem. Once you start having more and more of them starting to support this, then your average company organization can simply do what they do now. When they go to order their hosting service for their website, they click an extra box and it's just turned on. And that's what we would like to see. DNSSEC by itself, sure, you know, the geeks can implement this. It's not actually that hard, but it's not what I would expect, your average proprietor to do themselves. So the focus, and this is back to the point that we need to get more of the operational community at ICANN meetings. It's the operational community that has to hear this message, that they need to figure out ways to deploy it. And they'll come back and say, well, you know, this is difficult, this is hard to do, this is a technical problem. Good. We need that dialogue to happen, because that's the only way those problems will get solved. Right now, if I talk to somebody in a large organization, they'll say, well, yes, you know, I read this about DNSSEC and it looked like it was kind of hard to implement, so I just went and did something else. Mostly they could say that because there's no end user demand. If the end user started asking for it, of course, they would treat it differently. So to answer your question, essentially none. No one is supporting this other than Cloudflare, GoDaddy, a few, of course, a bunch of boutique, small hosting providers support this. But it's not en masse where anyone can do this. It is an opportunity, though, putting my entrepreneur hat on. It's an opportunity for somebody, a small hosting provider somewhere, any place in the world, to say, look, we will provide fully managed hosting and also provide DNSSEC for your website. And this has been things differentiating using DNSSEC has been an example for companies like there's a large ISP in the U.S. called Comcast, over 20 million people, and they support DNSSEC. And that was their reason, differentiation. People care about security now. So this is not all, but it's another piece that they can add to their security marketing portfolio. Sorry, I wish I could answer that better.
Well, it's Alan speaking. Let me ask a follow-on question. You said the operational community, the web hosts, hosters, and other people who we need to convince don't come to ICANN meetings. What meetings do they go to, and why don't we go to them?
I try to go to them. I think, and Dave, if you think of someone's, please chime in. I'm thinking there. I met a lot of them at a MOG meeting recently. I think that's in Dave's bailiwick. Hello. Well, I'm getting music now on the line.
I think they're telling us it's 3 minutes.
It's just a musical interlude. It's fine.
Okay. All right. Oh, that's so romantic. So I think there's MOG meetings, there are NANOG, OG meetings, which are things that ICANN does participate in often. But there are also we need to get at the guys that are not simply trying to connect the networks together. We need to actually get to some of the hosting providers as well. And I'm not sure. I would like to find them. I've presented at RSA meetings. I've presented at interop meetings. I think those are critical pieces. Working more closely, with the vendor community, without getting too too soiled, you know, but working close with the vendor community, I think, are good ways to get the word out. When I talk to people in the vendor community, I often get DNSSEC what? And I'm like, wow, how could you not know this? This is right up your alley. You know, this is you're selling you know, servers and hosting equipment. So, you know, I guess that's a homework item for me to try to find out, get a better handle on how to contact the operational community if there are any regular events they go to, and maybe how to get their attention. I think ISPCon might be one, but hey, I'm just thinking of the few ones that I've seen pop up and I've gone to and given my awareness training spiel. So
Rick, there's always Paul Vixie's standard response, how do you get anybody to implement something that that they're either reluctant to implement or can't justify financially, and that's you include it as a requirement for U.S. Government purchases, and then everybody implements it because they have to.
Well, it is a requirement for U.S. government stuff already, and they have implemented it poorly, but they have implemented it, and it's still that hasn't borne fruit other than within the U.S. government.
That's odd. Yeah.
End on time because of the interpretation. So I thank you all. As one suggestion, however, if you want to find out where do the web hosting companies and such go, look to the people who provide rack-mounted engines they run and find out where they sell them.
That's a good idea.
They must sell them at conferences somewhere, trade shows somewhere.
They do.
I thank everyone who presented. I thank all the people who came to participate in this teleconference, this webinar. It's great attendance, and I think we've all learned something. And I wish you all well for the rest of the day.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's been excellent.
See some of you in VA. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you very much. The webinar has been adjourned, and the audio will now be disconnected. Thank you very much for joining today's webinar.